I've entitled this discussion as a one-hour crash course on the basics of chinuch. And what's brought me to this is many, many things, too many to enumerate, some maybe not even appropriate to enumerate. But of recent, I had a conversation with a brilliant product of a moisid that claims to be the premier most moisid in chinuch in terms of a high school. And this individual came to me because he went on to a very distinguished Beis Medrash after that, and he discovered that he doesn't understand why is he learning, and then he doesn't really know what Yiddishkeit is all about. And he had sort of a meltdown, not a terribly psychological one, but not even a spiritual one, but a learning one. Like, you know, he said, this bein hazmanim, he learned, but not like previously. It was all day, all night. It was this. He was in an intensity of learning with a belated awakening that, like, what am I doing? What's it all about? I don't really know too much about Yiddishkeit, even though I know these mesechtes and I chazed them, and he has no charota about the knowledge that he has. He's very bright. But so I realized that we really have to begin at an early age. I hope it's not too late, but to really begin to have a sense of what are the most critical ingredients in chinuch. Now, in terms of chinuch,
did he really not know, or
he
just
no, whatever. That's anyway. In terms of, let me just present some ideas. In terms of chinuch, all of us are aspiring to be machanchim, whether it's to talmidim or to children. Children can be called talmidim. Talmidim is certainly called bonim, so it really is. It's really relevant to all of us, and therefore I thought I would take your time. I'm calling it an hour crash course. Start a little late. I was here early actually, but we'll try to see if we can get it in. And then at some point I'll give you the outline that I'm working from, and you'll see if you're interested in it. Okay. I have actually 12 points with some sub-points, and please bear with me. I would appreciate, it would be easier if we could have questions or discussion at the end, because what I find is once we open the floor to discussion, it's like a trap door, and you know, it doesn't stop. You just fall into the hole again and again. So allow me, please, to present these points. Point number one. I think that maybe one of the most important mindsets to be mechanech anyone in Torah is the recognition of the power that the Torah has. And the coupled with that, the craving and the depth of receptivity and craving that the Jewish neshama has, the neshama that stood at Har Sinai, the neshama that experienced this ultimate of pleasures, worldly and otherworldly pleasure, and that has left an indelible imprint, and that neshama craves Yishokeini Mechikais Piyu. So I think without this realization, if one thinks, oh, you know, the Torah, yeah, okay, they learn, it's the most powerful force in the world. Now, the bulk of its power is in its depth of understanding, in the beauty of the concepts, in the refinement of the concepts, in the deep intellectual analysis. But on all levels, it has a tremendous hashpah. I like to say in jest, not so nice sometimes, that the Torah is so powerful to be mashpia that even when people butcher it, it still has a hashpah. So it's very, very powerful. And that's something, it takes years of learning, it takes intensity of focus to recognize the koyach that it has. This was Rabbi Akiva's lesson, how he became a Baal Teshuva, and it's all powerful. And by the same token, or together with that, is the neshama craves for Torah, the neshama craves for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Mela, if we're aware of these two forces that exist, then we won't give up. We won't give up. We'll have patience. We'll have foresight. We'll be able to see the future that is completely invisible in front of us right now, because I know that the Torah has this power, and I know that every Jewish neshama has that receptivity. Okay, that I think is point number one. Point number two, we have to understand the cunning of the Yetzer Hara. There's a little bit too much sometimes in the world naivete in terms of how the Yetzer Hara works, and how the Yetzer Hara confuses us, and how the Yetzer Hara fools us. And we certainly learn, the Sefer Shoreim describes it, other Musas for him, but a person has to really internalize that message, because when you're confronted with it, both for yourself and for someone else's Yetzer Hara, it sometimes is, we become oblivious to the fact that we're not seeing the reality, they're not seeing the reality, because the Yetzer Hara has the ability to distort reality beyond anyone's wildest imagination. I had recently a situation, a young man called me up, he was having some issues with his own frumkeit, and how maybe his parents didn't appreciate it, and I told him that maybe your father's a little concerned that you're going to an extreme, and maybe it's a little bit unhealthy, which I think it may have been. So he says, no. He says, I think everything through, and I decide that this is healthy, this is proper, and I do it. That's very nice. You get A for effort, but you don't know the Yetzer Hara at all, because the Yetzer Hara doesn't let us think everything through and make clear decisions. He is there to distort us at every turn and at every opportunity. So that's something that we have to realize that. And together with that, I would say that the Yetzer Hara comes in many forms. And in each generation, there are different formats, different approaches that he takes. It's all the same. It's all to interfere with the Avedis Hashem. It's all to disconnect us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and from Torah. It's all to confuse us about what Rav Arye Levin told me in the name, the Alta told him, Alta Mislabotka told Rav Arye Levin that every day and at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, you should say the Posuk, I think it's Tilim Pevov, Posuk Yud Aleph. It's brought at the end of Mesilas Yesharim, the end of the Akdom, the end of Akdom, I think. Hayireni Hashem Darkecho, Ahaleich Bamitecho, Yachei Levavi Lirushmecho. We need a special Siyata Dishmaya. Chazal say, Bechol Yoim Vayoim Yitzur Shalodom Eskabru Alov, Vilmole HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisra Eino Yocholoi. The Yetzer Hara was given an advantage. The Melchemes HaYetzer is not equal. No. Yetzer Hara is Misgaber, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Oizer Loi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu interferes, and so we have to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even in Bechira Chopshis, we have to come on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Yetzer Hara has power, and each generation has its Yetzer Hara, and each individual has his own Yetzer Hara. And we have to be aware that they're different. If we're not aware of the Yetzer Haras, someone recently told me a story, leave names out of it, that a certain Rosh Yeshiva, Choshev Rosh Yeshiva, asked a certain Talmud in his in his mesifta to leave. He threw him out in the vernacular. I like to clean up the language in a little bit. He asked to transfer him to another school. I think he threw him out. But anyway, so he threw him out. And this person's uncle was a former Talmud of this yeshiva, and he calls up the Rosh Yeshiva and he says, "Rosh Yeshiva, I heard that you threw my nephew out of your school." So he says, "Yeah, oh, he does such nourish of things. He acts like it's impossible the way he acts of stupidity, such, you know, he acts like a baby, like stupid, like ridiculous. It's just beyond, you know, it's honest with it, whatever." So he says, Rosh Yeshiva, he says, that's the way kids act today. That's the norm, you know. So the Rosh Yeshiva says, "Nah." Says, "I understand years ago the kids used to be, you know, like Rav Huttner said, when they burnt down the dining room at Camp Morris, boys will be boys. You know, I understand years ago the way they acted. But this, ich verstehe nicht, I don't understand what he's talking about." Says Rosh Yeshiva, "Ebazoi, it's time for you to retire. If you don't understand the nature and the nesyonis and the habits of the youth today, then you have to retire. You can't interact with them." So it's very important to understand who they are as individuals and what it's all about. The Yetzirah is mamish, such koichus. And even if you happen to know the Zohar that says that the Yetzirah works himself in Eretz Yisrael, and he sends shluchim to Chutz La'aretz, he has well-trained shluchim. If our mechanchim would be as well-trained as the Yetzirah shluchim, whoa, the world of chinuch would look completely different. Anyway, okay. Let's move to point three. Forgive me for a moment. Point three. Individualization. I like to claim I took a statement that was used and adapted it to this quote. Someone told me that other people say it too. One size fits none. Everybody's an individual. And unless when we look at a room of and Hora, X amount of people here, if we don't realize that each and everyone, kishem she'ein partzofeim doima zoilazo, are there any identical twins here? I have identical twins and they also look different, yeah? Kishem she'ein partzofeim doima zoilazo, kach ein deoiseim doima zoilazo. So everybody is an individual and we must deal with each one as an individual. A veteran mechanech, an old one of the old Israeli, old time, you know, from the Misrad HaChinuch, once told me, he says, if you have two classes, Shmuel Aleph, both A class, you know, Aleph classes, the same level, everything, a school that has blessed to have so many classes of top-notch students, and you're teaching exactly the same thing, it's two preparations if you have two such classes. And of course, I asked him, how many people in the class? Well, if there's 25 in this class and 25 in that class, then it's 50 preparations, not two preparations. Now, obviously, 50 preparations is not a practical concept, but that should be the angle. Each one is different. When each one asks a question, I have to know where he's coming from. When each one has a problem, I have to understand. I have to understand the discipline that's needed for one or the other. I have to understand the pain, the agony that one person has, the difficulty that he has in understanding, and all of this as much as humanly possible. I don't want to scare anybody away because of that, but lemaisa, that's really what we have to do. And that's chanoich lanar al pi darkoi. It does not say chanoich lanaurim al pi darkom. It's an individualization process. One size fits none. Not one size doesn't fit all. That already is... That's
one size fits one.
What?
One size fits one.
No, one size fits none. One size means if it's one size for everybody, then it fits nobody. because it's not individualized. Okay, let's move on to another point, okay? There's a lot of preaching that's done in the world of chinuch. Maybe that's what I'm doing here. And I'm not sure I'm preaching to the choir, by the way. Okay? But chinuch is not about preaching, and it's not about teaching. Whoever told you that chinuch is about teaching? That's not chinuch. That's education. Chinuch is about reaching. You want to reach, the tagline that I like to use is reaching our talmidim or our children with a passionate and lasting commitment to Torah and to mitzvahs, to Yiddishkeit. That's, you have to reach. And reaching, there are three parts of the body that you have to reach. You don't have to reach the toes. No. You really should. The excitement should be such that mamashim penetrates to the toes as well. But let's see. Okay. Keep it to the ankles or the knees. The mind, the heart, and the soul. You want to reach the neshama, inspire it to soar. You want to reach the emotion so the heart internalizes and can feel commitment and passion and dedication and motivation. And the mind to understand. Not the memory as much as the mind. Memory is a small piece of mind. But it's the mind that's really the understanding, the thinking, the clarity, the yashrus, the insight, the analysis. You have to reach all of that. And otherwise, we're not really doing the malocha of chinuch. Okay. Let's talk for a moment about some general strategies of reaching. How do we reach? We want to reach the mind, the heart, and the soul of our talmidim. How do we reach them? So I would like to suggest here a number of things. A relationship is very important in reaching. When there's no relationship, it's very hard to reach, because you may be reaching out, but they're not reaching to greet you, because who are you? You know, there's nothing going on between us. There's no kesher, there's no bond, there's nothing. So it's relationship, but the relationship has to be based on many different factors. Based on love, that's quite obvious. Based on respect, that's not so obvious. When mechanchim hear that the Rambam says kishem shechayev hatalmid lechabedes orav kach orav tzorich lechabedes hatalmid, they get a little bit nervous. Like, what's that all about? You mean when the Talmud walks in, I should stand up? No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. But it doesn't even say chiyuv; it says tzorich. Kach orav kach hatalmid kach orav tzorich kach. The same way, not the same actions, but just as important, tzorich chabedes ha-talmid, meaning that it's a tzorich. And I would say the pshat in tzorich is, if you don't do it, you won't have a talmid. It's necessary. Because that love and that respect is critical to validating him, to making him feel good about himself, and then he's much more receptive. The relationship has to be...
covenant and respect.
What?
Covenant and respect. Giving someone honor.
No, we're not talking about honor, but respect. Respect here. Respect. Let's talk about children. You know, parents should respect their children. How would you respect your children? You gotta go take a bath right now. That's disrespect. I am 2 years old. That's still disrespectful. Would you like to take the bath now, or would you want to do it in 5 minutes? Or you have to talk with. Right now, I'm building the Empire State Building. I'm fixing Joe Biden's infrastructure all over the country with the Lego that I'm doing over here. Yeah, and now you're telling me I got to go take a bath. That's extremely disrespectful. And I'm 2.5 years old. You have to understand this, and you know there's a level. And if you start like that, then when they get older, you keep it there. You know, and I know there was a very distinguished educator. I heard a snippet of what he said, and he advised very strongly that when you tell people something, you tell them you have to do it. And why do children? Why? Because I said so. And to me, because I said so brings back a memory that I have standing in the Alpha Beta supermarket in North Hollywood many years ago. I don't think it exists anymore. And waiting on the line, the checkout line, and this little kid takes a candy or something. They used to put all the goodies right by the checkout, so the mother should have to spend another $10 with the kid, grabs everything over there, and she has to pay for it. And she says, the kid wants, she says, he can't have it. And the kid says, why not? Because I said so. The kid says, who's that 6-year-old kid? Who are you? I'm your mother. So what? Anyway, so I'm not sure that that's the right way. But anyway, you got to show. Again, let's go on, please, because this is an hour crash course. Remember, that's the good news. It's only an hour. Okay? The relationship has to be based on trust and honesty. Oy, trust is so important. Trust is the singular most important ingredient in any relationship. Because if I can't trust you, I don't have to, what am I talking to? Who am I talking to? What? And honesty, the same thing. It's all together. Honesty has to be, and a Rebbe, a parent, has to be so trustworthy and so honest and so loving and respectful. And in terms of a Rebbe and in terms of a parent, there's one more ingredient which I would say is critical to that relationship. And that is selflessness. A Rebbe that's moisa nefesh. Not moisa nefesh just because he works long hours and he makes little money. That's not a mesiras nefesh that a Talmud can appreciate. That's a little more sophisticated. That the board of directors should appreciate. And the Rosh Yeshivas should appreciate. And the Balabatim should appreciate. But it's kids a little. But the mesiras nefesh for me. Look what he's ready to do for me. Look how selfless he is when it comes to me. He puts me first all the time. This is something that forges a relationship that creates a conduit, a vehicle that we're able to reach them. We can reach their heart. We're connected. We can reach their mind because they want to listen to what we have to say, because we're so validating to them, and we're so important to them, we're so honest with them, and we're so dedicated to them, we're so respectful to them, and we're so committed to them. And such a mind and heart can touch the neshoma, because I let it in. I don't resist. In a relationship like that, I won't resist. So that's that. Now, I would say this is, that's point number one in the strategies to reach. Point number two, another way or another important ingredient in reaching Talmidim and children is excitement and passion for learning, and in case of a Rebbe, for teaching Torah, and in case of everybody, for Shmiras HaMitzvos. When they see excitement, first of all, excitement draws attention. Excitement, people are alerted, awakened to it. Excitement says there's something choshev going on over here. Excitement says that, what's this guy getting all excited about? This must really be something special, something real, and passion. Passion is contagious. It's contagious, and even if you wear a mask, it will go through the mask. It's contagious. It is nothing as contagious as passion. It's like a fire that just burns anyone in its way. And so when they see that, they love the learning. Love the learning. They're such a geschmack the Rebbe has in the learning. Every idea, every thought is so precious to him. It means so much. He's so excited about it. And Shmiras HaMitzvos he does, you know. And I would just add that it can't be an act. It can't be an act. Because kids are the most insightful and sensitive to phoniness. They're masters at detecting it. They could smell it light years away. And Mimela, if it's not real, then better not to do it. But what's that? It's not your personality to be excited about learning. There's quiet excitement. There's quiet passion. There's different people. Look, I'll give you an example. You could think passion means I don't know what, exploding and or you see a different kind of passion. You see a passion to understand everything. A passion to understand. The most beautiful example of the passion for learning is the Sefer HaChinuch in the mitzvah of Porah Aduma. The Sefer HaChinuch in the mitzvah of Kol Sora B'chol Dvash Lo Yisaktiro Isha L'Hashem, he doesn't know the reason. He gives tam to Ellis to all the mitzvahs for his son and his friends to their bar mitzvah. That's why he wants them to have a good introduction to the mitzvahs. When it comes to Kol Sora B'chol Dvash Lo Yisaktiro, he didn't know. And he says, I was not going to write something, but I'm afraid. If I don't write tam to Ellis to all the mitzvahs, then I'm afraid that the Sefer Torah will appear to them as a Sefer Chosum. It's like a closed book that doesn't make sense. And I'm afraid that they will rebel against the mitzvahs and forsake them forever. That's what he says. And therefore he comes, he writes something. So you see the commitment that he had to give tam v'tu'elus to all the mitzvahs, even though he did it to all the other mitzvahs, and this is only one mitzvah, and it's not even a Gehel HaMaisa, but he was afraid it could destroy their whole Yiddishkeit if they don't have time to us do a mitzvah. He comes to Porah Aduma, and he gets paralyzed. He says, Shlomo HaMelech says, Choshavti ech kevav hi rechoyko mimeni. Shlomo HaMelech couldn't understand it. Chazal say that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lecho ani megaleh. Only to you, nobody else is going to understand the time for Porah Aduma. And the Chinuch says, he couldn't do it. He's paralyzed. Shlomo HaMelech couldn't understand it. And Chazal say Hashem only revealed it to Moshe Rabbeinu. So, but then he writes a tam, something, whatever he writes. And he says at the end, he apologizes for writing it, but he says, Chibas HaKoydesh, the love of Dvorim Shebekdusha, V'cheshek Lahovin Benistorois, and the desire to understand things that are not so obvious to us, was menadnea, something menadnea etayad or etayet, it took my pen and forced it to write. Now, I don't know if he was jumping up and down and dancing in the streets when he did this. I don't know if you would say that the word overt passion applies to him, but that's passion. I couldn't control myself. I must understand. To understand, somebody says something, I want to understand it. We have a confusion. A lot of things are shver. So what? You know, you can show passion, you can express passion, you can feel passion even in things that don't seem overtly passionate. So okay, let's leave that now. If you want to reach, again, we're talking about reaching, not just teaching, preaching and teaching. As we just mentioned in the Chinuch, the benefits are extremely important. Because if I don't see what's in it for me, I'm not really interested. And don't think that there are so many people around that are so L'Shem Shomayim, that all they want to do is L'Shem Shomayim, and they have no inkling, no interest, no feeling of anything about personal benefit. And if you think that, then we got to go back to the first point about the second point about the power of the Yetzirah, because the Yetzirah can fool us to think that, but it's not reality. It's not everybody wants something for himself. So he has to know that it's going to make him. Chabad Salvov says that's why we do Chesed. Even on the highest level, I enjoy doing Chesed. It makes me feel good. That's also so. They have to know. He has to know what the benefits, fulfillment, and happiness is about. Feeling good about yourself, validation. Discussed that many times. And they have to know that this is the Torah is going to bring me that. And they also have to know the truth of Torah Misinai. It, to the degree that they know that the Torah will make me happy, the Torah is going to give my life meaning, it's going to make me feel good, and that it's true, you've reached them. That's because those are the two most important things. One without the other doesn't really work. Because the person who doesn't realize that it's to his benefit really doesn't want it to be so true, because what do I need it for? And the person that thinks it's beneficial, but it's not true, says, oh, this is very nice, this is making me happy. But eventually, you know, maybe there's something else out there that'll make me more happy. But when I know that it makes me happy, and I know that it's true, I'm there. I'm here. I'm not going anyplace. Okay. Another point in reaching, not just teaching and preaching, is modeling and practicing what we preach and what we teach. If you want to reach, you got to practice what you teach. Very important. How many people have been turned off because of hypocrisy? Today, there's a new emotional movement in the Jewish community, in the religious community, in the Haredi community, where some people are sensitive to the fact that there's so much being done, mitzvahs, everything, learning and mitzvahs, but it's like it doesn't penetrate. They're not living up to those standards. I was very taken aback when someone posed publicly. I felt it was not the right forum, but a question about, you know, a person's greatness in learning and an action which seemed to be, you know, not in sync with that greatness, and it's a problem. It's a problem. That's together Chilul Hashem. You look at the Mishnah Brura. That's what he says. And even if a person is not the Godel Hador, but if he's considered a Ben Torah, he's considered a Talmud Chochem, even if he's not such a Talmud Chochem, then if he doesn't act according to the directives of the Torah, then it sends a tremendous zilzal on Torah and on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's extremely important. And Talmidim are very, very... Imagine, you know, the lesson of... and the next guy says something and the Rebbe gets all bent out of shape. Imagine the lesson of and the next minute somebody says something and he puts him in his place publicly in front of everybody. It's all over. You've undermined most of what you may have accomplished in reaching the Talmidim. And once again, in terms of reaching, we need to revisit something you mentioned before, and that is dealing with each one as an individual. Nobody wants to be reached as part of a class action effort. You know, I'm an individual. I want to be treated as such. You want to reach me? You can't reach me at the common address. You reach me, you know. Rabbi Sholem Kamenetsky just told me this Yom Tov Chol HaMoed. He told me the following story. He says his first position in Chinuch was a 10th grade Rebbe in a Masifta in Lakewood, and he did fairly well. He says he controlled the class and had a good year. And years later, he met one of the students from that class, and he was telling him how it was so wonderful how he controlled the class and they learned so much. So he asked him, "What did I do?" So he said, "To each student, you refer to as Reb so and so." Reb Yaakov, Reb Yitzchak, Reb Yosef, Reb Shmero, Reb Beryl. Sign of respect. And I would add to it, rather than calling a person by his last name, which is really, I don't know what it is. I guess in a husband and wife you couldn't do that because they both have the same last name. But imagine calling your wife by her last name. You know, that's what kind of relationship is that? Anyway, so dealing with each individual student, and each one is unique, and treating them with respect and dealing with the uniqueness that they are is something very critical. Okay, let's move on. Another piece I think is very important is to be able to articulate the purpose of creation. What in the world are we doing here? You know, the biggest question that I believe eats away at almost anyone, or certainly almost anyone with any level of intelligence that walks the face of the earth. What am I doing here? What's the purpose? Why am I here? Very important question. And many people, unfortunately, have come to the conclusion, I'm here just to wait it out until I drop dead and to have a good time in the meantime. And that doesn't convince any thinking person that can make any sense, and that can make me have any positive feelings about this life. Pleasure doesn't make me feel good about myself, so I don't feel good about myself. Pleasure doesn't makes me feel bad about myself. If I don't know my purpose, so how can I feel good about myself? I don't even know my purpose. Imagine, I have no purpose, so like, what am I doing here? Like, why should I even be here? Very important to be able to clearly articulate the purpose of creation. One must include it in this effort is to explain what Chazal say. It's a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Lech Lecha. Lo nitnu hamitzvus elo litzarif buenos abriyos. The purpose of mitzvahs is to refine human character. Hashem wanted to refine our character, because when our character is refined, two things happen. Number one, I become capable of connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam, because I'm mahu afato, I'm hoilich bidrochov. I can't connect. If I'm a shakran, I can't connect with an ish emes. If I'm an achzor, I can't connect with a rachman. We're too far apart. We can't communicate. We can't have a relationship. We need to be alike. If I'm created b'tzelem Elokim, and I refine my character into human godliness, then I'm capable of connecting to Hashem, which is the ultimate hatova, the ultimate chesed, and I become worthy of it and deserve that, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers me with more and more chesed. And besides everything else, when people hear that Tikkun HaMidos is the Tachlis, when they quote the Evan Shlema, which is not a real quote from what he says in Mishlei, but it's approximate, says Imlav Tikkun HaMidos Lo Malichayim, the Goyim has no purpose to live if not for Tikkun HaMidos, because that's the purpose for everybody. That's what it's all about, and that's what the Torah does. So it's like very, very, and it makes me feel good about myself. Oh, I have such Midos, I'm godly. Oh, that's very, very validating. So, relationship with Hashem, once a person is into Tikkun HaMidos, and he knows Hashem created the world to do chesed, then he can begin through Torah and mitzvahs to develop this relationship with Hashem, and b'meila, I'm like him, and therefore I can connect with him. And David HaMelech said, "V'ani kirvas elokim li toiv." To be close to Hashem is the ultimate. That's the ultimate. There is no better good in the world. There is no greater pleasure in the world. There is no more lasting pleasure in the world. There is no relationship that's permanent, eternal, except the kirvas elokim. Because at best, human relationships end. If they don't end early on, they end in the grave. But kirvas elokim, my neshama now is connecting to an eternal relationship. There's something that's so moving about that. The critical importance of learning Torah and Musar. I am shocked by the fact that so many people are having trouble articulating, why is it so important to learn Torah? Why is it so important to learn Musar? That's even, you know, even harder sometimes. Maybe it's easier, I don't know, it depends who. But it's a critical issue. A gentleman once walked into the Beis Medrash, and he says, I have to ask you a question. He says, my son asked me a question. I don't know the answer. He asked my father, who's a Yodea Sefer, he learns, says my father didn't know the answer. My son asked his Rebbe, the Rebbe couldn't give him an answer. What's the question? Why is it so important to learn Torah? Critical question. Such an emphasis on Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Limud Torah is the greatest. It's the tachlis of the bria. The world was created Bishvil Yisrael sheyisasku b'Torah. Why is it so important? And if we cannot articulate that, as this young man that I mentioned, and at the beginning had no clue as to why it was so important. And because of that, it caused the greatest rashlus in his life. So, what are we trying to do? So, I think that's extremely important. Now, of course, that is the topic of a whole discussion, which is beyond the scope of this discussion. But you know, just in terms of some broad strokes, the person has to realize that it's through the Torah, you know. I must have told this story here before, but forgive me, it's one of my favorite stories, and I don't think it's written in any book because I saw it myself, and I don't think the biographers were around. Rav Eliashiv would come to a bar mitzvah of children in the family, even in the extended family, but his minig was, he would come in, he would sit there 5-10 minutes with the Bar Mitzvah Bocher, take a picture with him, and then leave. Didn't have time for these things. Fine. So he's sitting at this Bar Mitzvah. I saw this myself. And he takes a picture with Bar Mitzvah Bocher. Then he goes over to the father of the Bar Mitzvah Bocher and he says, could you bring me the older one, the one who had a Bar Mitzvah last year, or whatever it was, a year and a half ago. So he says, what's that? What's why? He says, because last year, last Bar Mitzvah, I was sick and I didn't come. And I want to take a picture with this one so he shouldn't feel bad that his brother has a picture with me and he doesn't. Now, you didn't see Rabbi Yashir's picture too many places. It wasn't like the Matzav today, you know what I mean, with all the pictures. He wasn't looking for a picture. He was way above these things. But to have a man who has the burden of Klal Yisrael on his shoulders, this is in his later years when he was mamish, the Mani Gador, and his learning was 18 hours a day, 19 or 20, who knows how many hours a day, day and night, with such hasmoda that it was not shayach. And to have this in his mind, that the last Bar Mitzvah I didn't come because I was sick and I want to take him. That's what the Torah does. That's what the Torah does. The Mishpatei HaTorah, refined character. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says on the Pasuk in Veschanan, Ki Yichochmaschem Ubinaschem Leinei Kol Ha'amim, Hashe Yishmun Es Kol HaChukim O'Eile Ve'omru, Rakam Novem V'Chochem Agoy Agon Lazeh. So he's bothered by the Kasha. When the Goyim will hear the Chukim, they'll say, wow, what a brilliant nation. When they hear the Chukim, they laugh. The Chukim, that's what Rashi brings, Chazal bring the Maligin Oleinu with the Chukim. So he says, no. He says, first they'll hear the Mishpatim. And they'll be so awed by the depth and the sensitivity and the beauty of the Mishpatei HaTorah that they'll say, it must be that the Chukim are also brilliant and a Goyish Kop can't understand it. That's what will happen. That's the power that the Torah has. The depth, the sensitivity, the beauty. It's like not shaykh. I don't want to go into the whole shmuz now, but the Alta has a shmuz that if you contract with a worker to work, the Mishnah Sechas Apoyalim, if you contract with a worker to work and you agree to pay him a certain amount a day, food included, you're not yoytze the contract, even if you give him kisuda shloim b'shaytoy. And Rashi says, and the Mishnah says, because they're b'nei Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Rashi says Avram's suda was more than suda shloim b'shaytoy. So what? You're not yoytze. You gave him suda shloim b'shaytoy. Ask the goy. Ask the worker, the Jew. Ask him, are you happy? Did I fulfill my obligation of giving you food? What are you talking about? I can't eat this food. You have more food here. It's food for an army. Of course he's thrilled. Soak the altar, but subconsciously it doesn't fully satisfy him because he's Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov. If that's the case, we see from here, he says, that an open-ended contract has the responsibility to satisfy the subconscious as well. And therefore, the Mishnah says, if he hired him without specifying, go back and tell him, the menu is bread and beans. You know, that's the menu. So now you have no taina, because that's what you agreed to. But if I agreed open-ended, then I have to satisfy. Who in his right mind, who in his any mind, who in his depth of sensitivity could imagine such a concept that I have a open-ended contract that is, since I didn't specify, I'm mechuyev to satisfy your subconscious needs. I'll ask you and you'll swear up and down that you're thrilled with the way I satisfied the contract, but no, shame b'nei. Anyway, so this is important, the depth of insight that the Torah has, the sensitivity it gives us. One of the most powerful, and I really, it's too much. This is a whole discussion in itself. I want to finish the whole thing, but one of the very beautiful Rabbeinu Simcha, the Machzor Vitri, says, Yofet Talmud Torah Derech Eretz, Shegia Shnei Mashkachas Ovoin. So he says, Talmud Torah means learning Hilchas Gzeila. And he says, if you learn Hilchas Gzeila and you have a Shtikul Parnosa, you're not going to come to steal. Fine, but what's the loss of mashkachas over you? Mashkachas, forgot. No, you won't do it. Teres says no. It takes it out of out of your mind. It's forgotten. It's out of the realm of possibility. It doesn't exist for you stealing. Why? Because that's what the Torah does. If I didn't have a parnosis, even if I learned Hilchas Gzeila, I might. Oh, yeah, I don't have what to eat. Okay, I have to think about stealing. Oh, but if I have a shtikul parnosa and I learn Hilchas Gzeila, then it's mashkachas ovein. If I learn Hilchos Shabbos, it makes it, it's forgotten. I'm not tempted. It becomes part of my psyche that Yikdat Mechal Shabbos. And if you really learn Hilchos Lashon Hara, that's a harder one. Mashkachas ovein. That's the Koyach HaTorah, amongst many, many other things. And of course, Musar has to be understood as just a chelik of the Torah. But we're not as deep and is great and is sensitive and is capable of drawing all of these yesodis out of the Gemara without the help of the Sifrei Musar. So the Sifrei Musar of Yisrael Salat, I mean, actually they did it, the Kadmonim did it before, but that we have special Sforim that have extracted the parts, the Meinol Machaveroi, the Avedis Hashem, the Chochmas HaMusar, that have extracted these, so we study them individually so we can master them, because we're not on the level of the previous generations which were able to master them without it. And of course, the basics of Musa have to be taught, and the distance of between the mind and the heart, and the recognition of the cognitive dissonance that exists in people, and we have to be able to penetrate the concepts and the ideas to the emotion, and that's done through Musa Bispilus, that's done through Chinuch HaMusa, through actions. And okay, one more point on this point, and then I hope we could try to finish up quickly. What do you think? Right, we'll see what we can do, and that is making some sense out of suffering. It's a big shter, it's a big concern that interferes with a lot of people. Some people are interfered in their Yiddishkeit because of suffering that they have. Sometimes it's even abuse that they suffer. Sometimes, and of course, if they have a little bit of knowledge and emunah, they know that Hashem's in control of everything, so it starts to impact them in terms of that. Some, just seeing the suffering of others is enough to give them such a kasha and such a and this again is a full time unit. There's a lot that's written about it. There are some broad strokes. Actually, one of the things I want to do is to I really couldn't bring for everybody, but this book is entitled Impassioned Chinuch, even for those who think they don't have passion, you know, and it's a teacher's guide to reaching next generation. I'm making a donation to your library, and So if you want, you borrow it. You can get from our office. If you call there, you could get a copy sent to you. I think it could probably be downloaded online too. I don't know. But anyway, okay. But one of the things we have to do is make some sense out of suffering, because it's very disturbing. Chazal said it beautifully in one maimer where Yaakov Avinu is mispalut to Hashem. He says, "Ribbono shel Olam," he says, "Esav is coming. If you allow Esav," he says, "in your Torah you're going to write Esav es b'nei lo yishchat to be yemechot. If you allow Esav to destroy my whole family in one swift move in one day, haTorah sha'ato osed liten b'Sinai miyikre bo." Who's going to want to read your Torah if you're a hypocrite? You say, a sensitivity to an animal that doesn't even feel the sensitivity. And you allow Esav to take my family. So it's a big problem. And again, this stuff about suffering, there's much stuff that's written about suffering. We don't have time to go into it. There are broad strokes that people like to say. And they like to say that, well, we can't understand Hashem. True, 100%. Not satisfying enough to somebody who is vexed, who is disturbed by this suffering. And we have to get more into it, and they have to be able to see that there's benefits. People grow. I mean, I've had just this week alone with some people that who have been through, one person that have been through the worst, and this person recognizes that they are today on an elevated level, a different type of a human being, all because of the suffering that they went through. So it has very positive effects. I think very useful in, but again, the Welt, they say basically it's like a tapestry, you know, and on the top you see this beautiful needle point that from the beginning of time to the very end, and everything fits together and everything makes sense and everything is logical, v'chulei v'chulei. And the bottom, when you look from here, all you see is these strings hanging, different colors, different levels, different lengths. It just looks like a mess. And but of course, it's true, but it's not enough. It needs a lot more work than that. And it needs a lot more work than the Chassidish Rebbe in the Holocaust, when they asked him, why does Hashem allow this to happen? So he says, I learned a long time ago, I don't ask Hashem why, because I'm afraid if I ask him why, he'll say, oh, come on upstairs and I'll show you, you know, I guess I'll show him the tapestry, and I'm not quite ready to go, you know. So these are very nice, but don't try to get away with these things. And you have to be careful. To someone who suffered, to explain suffering is very painful in itself. It's almost like not validating his suffering. You have to validate a person's suffering too. So it's a very complex thing. Eoyv spent 38 prokim trying to figure out why and what was going on before Hashem told him, Eifo ha'yisa b'yosti oretz. You weren't around from the beginning of time to now. You can't possibly understand. He was only ready to tell him that after Lamed Ches Prokim, after he really made an effort. But that's something that we must, it's important to read up on that and to be able to articulate that in some way, making some sense. Nobody knows the real answers, but making some sense out of it. Okay.
So what's the way?
What?
You're saying there's no way, you shouldn't say the carpet ends there, because that's what people...
No. There's, you have to read about it. There are, if you're interested, I'll give you some stuff to read. All right? But it's a work. It's not, you know what I mean? It can't be done. And if you make light of it, then you lose a person who suffers. And the first thing you have to do is to validate his suffering. People that have validated, even when you validate their suffering, by the way, people want empathy, not sympathy. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. It makes you feel bad, not good. I understand your pain. I feel your pain. Your pain is real.
How do you feel about
it? I've taken, it's almost like it's a chatzi nechoma. I've taken some of it away from you because I share it with you. When I share it with you, it's diminished. Okay, but that's a whole chokhmah. I'm sorry.
How does that not sound disingenuous to the person?
What?
How does that not sound like insincere to the person?
Why?
How can you share his pain? You don't know what
okay, so I'll tell you. That's a very good question. But listen to this. There are people in this room who have suffered. Those people have a unique opportunity to answer your question. Because it's not disingenuous. They know what pain is. They know what suffering is. And they can feel your pain. I must have, with the things that I've been through in my life, I've used them, I don't know how countless times, to be able to commiserate with others and to show them that I do understand what they're feeling, because I also went through similar things. And so you're right, if you don't have any suffering in your life, then maybe somebody else should do that part of the counseling. But yeah, be careful. But again, this is all part of the chokhmah of what you need to know. Okay, let's please, I want to finish please right now. Can I just finish, then we could do okay. Again, we spoke about validating students. There's another thing, believing in them. When you believe in someone, you empower them. I'm fighting now with a family that has a problem with a child, and I'm begging them that they must believe in this child, that the child doesn't have a problem. And that belief in the child, that the child doesn't have a problem, will be guaranteed to be therapeutic. To a fullest extent, to what extent, that I can't guarantee, but guaranteed to be therapeutic, because people, we communicate. People, kamayim aponim elponim, the heart communicates, and people, especially children and talmidim, they grow to the belief that we have in them, to the expectations that we have for them. I never forget one of years ago when we were dealing with some of the worst, most difficult cases, and this young man wreaked havoc in my life. Made the mistake to take him into, as a high school kid, take him into a dormitory situation. And that year I probably was in the dorm at 2 o'clock in the morning every other month to get done. Anyway, after 6 months he starts turning around, and I say to him, I say, what happened? So he says, you did it. I said, I did it. I didn't do anything to you except come and scream at you in the middle of the night and try to, I don't know, hold you back from burning the place down. So he says, no, you believed in me. That's it. You believed in me. That's therapeutic, that's educational, that's overwhelming, that's powering. Empowering, that's validating, that's everything. Okay, next. We have to be sensitive to pressure. You know, the older we are, the less sensitive we are to pressure. Younger kids are much more sensitive to pressure because they take it more seriously than we do. Forgive me, it's not such a flattering thing, but there's an expression in Yiddish, you know, "Megitzach haneitzer." You know, when we do something wrong, all right, then, you know, c'est la vie, that's what they say in French, you know, that's life, you know. A mensch is a mensch, you know, nope. It's a human being is, what can we do? Kids are very pure. And they hear something, they feel the pressure. We also feel pressure. And therefore, every time we do Kabbalah Samach Shemayim, it has to be preceded by Ava Rabba, Ava Soilim, Oyev Amu Yisrael, Boich Amu Yisrael, Ba'ahavo. That eases the pressure. But kids, for sure, and we have to be careful. Some people are just putting too much pressure on the kids, and it's very, very painful. We have to realize that Yiddishkeit be'etzem is a pressure. You have responsibilities. You have things you have to do, and you're not doing them for to satisfy a human being. You're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and the more intelligent they are, the more sensitive they are, the more they feel the pressure. It's like a person has a hearing aid. You're whispering to him, and he put his hearing aid on high, and he says, "Why are you screaming at me for?" Because his senses are much more sensitive. So. Something we have to realize, pressure. I love to quote the Rashi in the end of Kehelas, Tzidora Klanishmas, Elikim Yira, says Rashi, Elikim Yira, Mashatuchal Asei, Velibchol Hashemayim. That's what Yira's Hashem is. Doing the best you can, and Velibchol Hashemayim, always trying to get more. Now this is very therapeutic, unless there's OCD involved. Because if there's OCD involved, then I'm half serious and half joking, but half serious because then you say, oh, what's Masha Tuchel I say? Maybe I could do more. You gotta calm them down. We do the best we can. It's true. Masha Tuchel I say, but leave Chol HaShemayim. Okay, we're almost finished here. Next. Discipline. The root of discipline, as you know, they have roots in English, the root of discipline here is disciple. What is a disciple?
Student.
So therefore, what is discipline? Teaching. You want to teach what?
No.
Teaching. And then, wait, we'll get to the reaching. You're right. At least somebody's listening. Yeah. But discipline, you want to teach. You don't want to control. It's not about controlling. Now, it's very important in discipline that people see that you're caring, that you're sensitive, that you're flexible, but yet they know up front that there are certain things, and the advice that most disciplinarians have is keep your list of rules as short as possible, because the more rules you have, the more difficult it's going to be for someone to live up to those standards, you know, and they know that these are consequences for these behaviors, and in a sense they choose to have the consequences, and you avoid a lot of fighting that way. This is a complicated discussion too, but that's it. But basically there's a chemical formula here. R minus R equals R. What that is? Rules equals rules, yeah. I see where you're coming from. Yeah? Rules minus
relationship
equals
rebellion.
Very good. Okay. This is not my own. Okay, anyway, next. What?
I've heard it from
Okay, for me, I got it from somebody. Anyway, okay. Encourage questions. Now, encourage questions means the following. If you don't encourage questions, or if you are neglectful or negating or cynical about questions, then you send some terrible messages. First of all, it's invalidating. I can't even ask a good question. Second of all, it looks like I have something to hide. Third of all, you leave something in my brain that's gnawing away at me and confusing me, which could have some devastating effect at any time in the present or the future. So it's very important to encourage questions. But if you're going to encourage questions, which you must, you got to know a lot of answers. There is a validity to the answer of I don't know. I have told the story here many times when Pascha Abramsky told me that when he came to London, the first day they pushed him in, this new goyin, this Eloi, and the Rosh HaKol came after him, he says, Echvesnish, he doesn't know. And the old Dayan was very upset. What? He says, of course I know. The first lesson that the Jews of London have to learn is the Rav doesn't have to know everything. That's an important lesson. But the second lesson is the Rav has to know something. And especially in Ikrei Hadas, like they ask you a question about Emunah and say, why do we, let's find out. I'm going to call up the rabbi and ask him, what do we believe? It's too late. That's what you have to do before you hit the classroom, before you hit the parenthood. That's something, and that's what you guys should be starting to do now, to be able to master Hashkofa, to be able to answer questions. And questions also, answers have to be tailored to the individual. When there's a question you have to answer the question, and also what's behind the question. There's two things. If you just answer what's behind, the question will still be a camouflage, a buffer, and he won't get away from it. If you just answer the question and you didn't deal with what's behind the question, so it'll keep coming again and again. So you have to answer the question and also have to understand what's really bothering this guy and addressing that in any way possible. So it requires a lot of preparation, a lot of hashkofa, a lot of knowledge, a lot of work, a lot of reading, and it's really very important because...
What do you mean by behind?
What's behind the question? People ask questions. Usually there's either an agenda or there's something that's bothering them behind the question, beyond the question, comes from someplace. The question is what? An example. I don't know. All right, now it's late. I don't know. But life has many examples. It's bullshit. A person, there's something really bothering him. He asks this question, and there's something bothering him, and he's asking a question, but in reality, he's disturbed by something. He suffered something, and he's asking some academic question about something, but in reality, he's angry sometimes, and he's saying something else, or the famous way, the way they do it, I'm asking for my friend, you know, so got to answer the question, you also got to find out who the friend is, which is really him, and what's bothering him. So, okay, let's move on. Growth is by small steps. One of the biggest problems in chinuch, children, and talmidim, is you want to see the development overnight. Anything you see overnight will disappear the next night. The healthiest development is slow and steady. And you have to be patient for that, and you have to be soyvel a lot of things, and sometimes disyoinus. You know, if you push, many people push their talmidim too far, too fast, because they're embarrassed. Or it's bad for the rep of the institution. Got to be very careful. Very careful. Have to figure out. If you push too fast, you could destroy someone. You have to ask a shayla whether you're allowed to kill somebody just to save the reputation of your institution. Many people hold you are. Anyway, just, I don't get that. Agav, I'll just tell you a psak halacha that I heard from Rav Eliashiv. Well, actually, I told him, but he agreed with me. and that was that I came and asked, I said, in the Welt, they say that if you mekalkel acherim, you can throw him out. He's mekalkel acherim. Mekalkel. Okay, what's mekalkel? Nobody knows. Mekalkel acherim. Fine. I said, L'chair, it's not true. And the shayla is like this. It depends. If you have to look at what's going to happen to him and what damage he's doing. Let's say he's makalkal, means he's a roidif. He's killing somebody, whether it's physically or spiritually. Then you have to get him out, and no matter what happens to him, you try your best, but whatever happens to him, that's not your problem, because he is killing someone. Agav, if you didn't stop him in the early stages, you also said, Litnes Adin, I don't want to scare anybody. But, you know, you can't say, oh, well, he's a roitzeach, he's a roidif. Yeah, but you made him. You let him become that. It's because of you he became that. If you would have treated him the right way, if you would have known what you're doing before you entered this school or this classroom, that wouldn't have happened. So, yes, you may still have to do that, but it ain't going to be pretty. Anyway, that's one. So if he's a roidif, but let's say he's not a roidif. He's makalko. He's not a roidif. So if he's going to be a little bit makulkal, but not to die, okay? You're not allowed to, you know. You're not allowed. Ain't the nefesh, but they nefesh. Well, let me just finish, please. Okay, let me just finish that. So if it's a little bit, he's doing a little here. But let's say he's doing a little here, and you send him out, you're going to kill him. He's not a religious. You have no right to do that. And he agreed with me. He said, you're right, you can't do that if he's not a roidif, if he's going to be killed or he's going to go off the derech. But you have to tell the parent body that that's your policy. So you're not misrepresenting. They think that you have this pristinely pure institution where everybody is a tzaddik. A very naive parent body, but anyway, where everybody is a tzaddik. And therefore, you have to let them know what the story is. What's that?
There's nothing wrong with having that policy.
That what?
Perfect.
That's a different discussion. It's not true. So, you know, I mean, we pretend that we have that, or we believe that we have that. I would say you might believe it, but in reality, you're just pretending because there is no such thing. But anyway, let's leave that alone. Okay, listen. Before we get, no, you let the parents know that we do have a policy here where we tolerate certain things because we don't want to destroy people. Yeah, the policy is known. Otherwise, if they feel it's not fair to the parents, if they feel that this institution is only perfect students, okay. If he's a roidif, then you have to stop him from killing, and whatever happens, you have to do the best you can.
When do you look at the result?
What?
When do we look at the result?
What result?
The result of what's going to happen to him.
Now you have to look. You have to see.
Even if he's not a roidif.
What?
If he's not a roidif.
If he's not a roidif, so you can't.
If
he's not a roidif and you're going to kill him, you're not allowed. Oh, how do you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to kill him, you ask me. I have more experience with that than anybody around. You ask me, I just had a fight on the street here while I was waiting to be picked up with somebody that they did that to someone. I said, tell him, I said, he's a murderer. He's a murderer and he has no right to do it. And that's very credible when you bang on the table. You know, he's a murderer. You expect everyone to listen to you. Anyway, okay, listen like this. Before we get to the last point, we're at the last point. I would like to give these out. All this is exactly the outline, exactly what I did from today. I'm doing it right before the last point because once everybody gets up, then half the people take it and half the people forget about it. The other half don't even want to take it. But if you just pass this out, please. All right, so here, maybe some here, some there. I think it's worthwhile to review this and then to work on it. The last point is self-development for students and parents. Allow me to discuss it while you're passing this around. See, you're ready. You're not listening to me. I told you. That's what happens. Okay? So now, I'd say like this. Self-development. Self-development for the student means like this. One of the big disrenes in chinuch is we so regulate our children, we so regulate our students that they get the message, I'm not responsible for myself. Because my Rebbe, my parent, or someone else is always responsible. That's why you have so many irresponsible people. Because they were never taught that they're responsible. You're responsible for yourself from the time you're a baby till the time you're over a bottle. You're responsible for yourself. But when we're constantly being ruled and directed and controlled and disciplined in the non-disciple form, then we're sending the wrong message. So that's a very important message. But there's another message that I'd like to send to, and that's why I'm giving this out. Because the Rebbe and the parent are responsible for themselves too. A Rebbe's job is to constantly improve himself. Constantly be working on himself. Somebody gave me a quote. The guy told me, he admitted to me that he made it up. But anyway, it's a good quote. Yeah, he says, listen to this. It says, the concept of feeling content and satisfied is the antithesis of excellence. We must always make every effort to improve. That goes for a parent and that goes for a Rebbe. It's constantly making efforts to improve. Number one, it helps them because they see we're working on ourselves. They have imperfections. We have imperfections. They're aware of our imperfections. The only way we can cover our imperfections is they see that we're working on it. And if they point out your imperfection, you know what you got to do? You just have to say the following words. Guilty as charged. Even if you're not guilty, it might help to say that sometimes, but that's a different discussion. What that might help, because then they see that you're... But they, you know, if you're guilty, admit it. There was a shaila going around many years ago in the world of chinuch. Should a Rebbe apologize to a student if he hurt him? Shlera shaila! Uy, 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 chazam machloikis, and so many. Svoras lakanu lakan. Insanity. Insanity! Should you apologize to a student if you hurt him? Should you apologize to your child if you hurt him? Nonsense. It says, did you ever notice in the Mishnah Berurah, it talks about asking Mechila, that it says, oh, but not to. You did an obligation, you got to do. You know. If you did it to a Rebbe, there's even a stronger Mechila. That's something else. You have to go to the Kever. The other people, you can go three times here. You may have to go more. After, I don't remember what it says exactly, but, you know. Anyway, so we have to work on ourselves. A good Rebbe will sit down every night and make a cheshbon hanefesh and see, how did I do today? I hurt this one, I made a mistake over here. I said to him, I have to do better. What can I do to improve? I have to learn a little musr about this. A little bit, I had a pigia there, a little bit, and a little anger, a little embarrassment, a little jealousy, a little, I have to work on it. A Rebbe is a work in progress. Excellence is a work in progress. This, I think, can help a little bit. Because what this, no, it's okay. Because this is just a review, and I beseech you, Rabbi Yisrael, take this outline and keep in the sugya. Keep working on different aspects as you go along. Don't take it off your regular learning and your regular story, but a little bit so that you develop the tools, you develop the insights, you develop the material, the information, and we could really be yoyse and be zeicha to do meleches Hashem be'emunah. And there is no greater schus than doing meleches Hashem be'emunah. There is no greater koyach than having talmidim who go b'derech Hashem. The Gemara says, Chazal say that habasakias harabim ein chet po'al yodoy. So it says the reason shaloyehu begehenim the talmidim began eden. A person who's mezake others, he has to go to Gan Eden, because if I sent someone to Gan Eden, are you talking that I should be burning downstairs and he's sitting up next to the Kisiyat Kovet? So Mimela, even though I may not deserve it, or I might otherwise have come not to deserve it, but because I have to be there with him because I sent him there, it's the greatest chus in the world. But we have to be able to do it there, Munah.